You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, welcome to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful night, and thank you so much for tuning in and supporting all that we're doing here on the podcast. It's been amazing. You guys have been amazing out there checking us out and subscribing and downloading, and it's just a real pleasure. Of course, I'm your host, Brent Thomas. This is the Paranormal Portal podcast, and once again, special thanks to Revolver Podcast for making all this possible. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, I guess that means we are underway, and I hope you guys are having a great night, and thanks so much for being a part of the portal, and always, as always, if you have an account of your own or an encounter or something paranormal that's happened to you that you'd like to share, please feel free to do so by emailing paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, and check out our podcast everywhere there that podcasts are. I've got several pulled up for you, and I hope they're enjoyable. So the first one I'm going to read to you tonight is from Texas, and sounds pretty interesting, so let's see what's going on in Texas. Says, every fifth grader gets the chance to spend a week in Camp Tyler in the middle of a forest. People say that Camp Tyler is actually haunted, but I really didn't believe them. I went to Camp Tyler in the middle of fall, and one day while everyone else is getting ready to ride the zip line, I sat in a spot several feet away from everyone else, and I chickened out of riding the zip line, and I felt as though someone was watching me, so I looked around, but no one was so much as looking at me. So one night in Camp Tyler, we had gone out to watch owls, and we were on our way back to the cabins, and we stopped, and one of the camp counselors mimicked the sound of a nocturnal bird that was nearby, and I saw a partially transparent white figure standing among the trees, but no one else seemed to notice it. This happened on September 23rd of 2006. My best friend Jeremy and I were exploring a forest in his neighborhood, and Jeremy stopped to check out some paw prints on the ground, and I heard something jump from a tree branch above me, and I looked up, and by the looks of it, whatever had leapt from the branch had been larger than a squirrel because the thick branch was shaking and waving slightly. My breathing became shaky, and Jeremy, let's get back to our house, I said, looking at Jeremy, and I began to feel as though someone was watching me, and Jeremy stood up. Uh-oh, he said, looking around. I don't know where we are anymore. Suddenly, the hair along my spine stood on end. Jeremy? I said, starting to sweat from fear, and Jeremy looked at me. Do you feel like someone's watching you, too? He asked quietly. I nodded, and Jeremy and I glanced over our shoulders because it felt like they were right behind us, and we followed a deep, dried-up creek bed, and the invisible person followed us as well. At one point, Jeremy stopped and signaled for me to stop also, and he listened closely to a hole on the left wall of the dried creek bed, and I listened too and heard rattling. The only explanation for that noise, is a rattlesnake. And Jeremy exclaimed, quietly jumping back, "Be careful. There's one here, so there are most likely others." And Jeremy and I continued on our journey to find a way out of the forest. Excuse me. Climbing over tree roots, pushing our way past vines and watching out for snakes, the invisible person continued to follow us. And every once in a while, we'd hear them step on a leaf behind us, and it felt like really they were right behind only me instead of both of us. And I felt cold, and I was still sweating from fear. When Jeremy and I found our way out of the forest, we were a long way away from his house. And in fact, we were right beside Golden Road, and we walked along the curb until we reached the train track, and we turned the corner and followed it, and I sensed that the invisible stalker was still there. And my heart sank. "Who's following us?" I thought, glancing over my shoulder, but nobody was there. Soon we reached a road and turned and walked along the road, and "We're close. I think I recognize this neighborhood," said Jeremy, leading the way, and I still kind of felt the stalker behind us and muttered, "Good." It was getting close to sunset, and we heard the sound of a leaf getting stepped on behind us, and Jeremy and I both turned, both jumped and turned in midair, startled, and there was nobody there. And Jeremy and I exchanged glances, turned, and ran for it. When we stopped to catch our breath, my whole body was shaking, and Jeremy started walking again, but I couldn't move. I felt something touch my back and the invisible stalker's cold breath on the side of my neck. A surge of fear flowed through me, and I ran to catch up with Jeremy, and eventually we found our way to his house with no more incidents. Several weeks later, I went with Jeremy and his mom to his grandparents' house, and we explored the forest there, but then we eventually got bored, and Jeremy sat on a dead fallen tree and began digging into it, tearing it apart, and I stood on stronger, less rotten part of the trunk, and we talked for a while. Then I felt the sharp, stabbing pain on the back of my neck. Looking up, I saw a dark figure standing in the distance, seeming to stare in our direction. My breath seemed to get caught in my throat, and I glanced at Jeremy to see if he saw the dark figure, but he didn't. He was too busy tearing into the dead tree, and when I looked back at where the figure had been, it had just vanished. Yeah, that's creepy. That's really creepy. I don't know. You know, it's tough. But again, I think we really have that sixth sense. We know when we're being watched. We know when someone's there. We know when when there are eyes upon us. And I don't know how we know that, but it seems like a pretty universal thing that most people pick up on. It's like you just know. If you're just sitting in a room full of people, and just suddenly you'll feel like the weight of someone's stare on you. And when you look around, sure enough, there's someone in the distance glancing at you or whatever. And it's kind of a creepy feeling, but it's, you know, at the same time, I guess it's better to feel it than not to know. So the next one's coming out of California, ladies and gentlemen, and let's see what's going on in California. Always wanted to use the Ouija board. That's just a terrible start, because that never ends well. That never ends well when people start out that way. Because I felt that maybe it might actually work, since I've always felt connected with spirits, and also because how spooky it was to find out. My friend's mom and dad found the Ouija board buried about 4 feet under a house they were remodeling. It says remolding, but I know they meant remodeling. So if it was buried, it's probably not a good thing to bring it out and start using it. Me and my friend tried it every time I spent the night at her house, just hoping that one time it might work. And we'd light up candles and all this other spiritual stuff, but it never did until one night. It was my birthday, and a couple of my closest friends, it says closets friends, but I know they meant closest, were staying the night, and I had Alex bring it over because I thought maybe it would work better with more people. And it was late at night, and we all stuck two fingers on the pointer, and it was me and three of my friends, my sister and my brother, and I was the speaker or whatever you call it, so I was asking all the questions, and I asked if anybody would like to talk to us. And after trying for so long that night, it did move. It went over to yes. not really fast, but it went there. And we were all so amazed, we never actually thought it was going to work. And I knew none of us could be moving it. All our fingers were on so lightly, and just the way it moved didn't seem to be us. I asked a lot of questions, and it answered them, and I can't remember them all, though. Then I asked if I knew it, and it said yes. My brother died in 2001, so I thought it might be him, and I asked if it was Kenny. It went straight to yes, and my siblings burst into tears, and I told it we loved him and missed him and asked how heaven was and all that stuff. And then I ran to my dad because I was excited to tell him that we were talking to Kenny, and he's never believed in spirits or ghosts or any of that, and I just wanted to prove it to him that it was true, and he said we were moving it. So I told my dad to ask a question that none of us would know the answer to so that we couldn't answer it. And he asked, what was the name of the guy who you brought home to beat me up? It took a while, and then it moved to a couple of letters and spelled out a name. And my dad said it was wrong. We knew we weren't moving it, so it couldn't be us. And then I realized we weren't talking to my brother. I don't know if we ever were. I felt betrayed, and I thought that whatever we were talking to was evil, for even saying it was my brother. And then I said, this isn't Kenny, is it? And it went straight to no. That scared us. We asked if it knew any of us, and it said yes. And we asked who, and it said Ashley. And Ashley asked if it was her grandfather, and it went to yes really quick. We asked it how many kids her grandpa had, and we didn't say the answer out loud because we figured it was only saying things we said, and that's how it answered all the ones about Kenny, and it said the wrong number. I said, this isn't grandpa, is it? And it went to no, and I felt a cold chill, and we stopped playing with it at that point. I think whatever we were talking to that night is still in my house. The lights flicker, the doors open and close, and my room is the worst of all, and it's always so cold. I have horrible nightmares in there now, and the lights never work in there, and they always break right away. We even had a guy come over and try to fix my ceiling light, and right after he did, it broke again. I feel a presence in my house, and it scares me at times. Feels like I'm being watched, and I don't know what it is, but it really freaks me out. So here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. If you ever find a Ouija board that's buried, leave it there. One of the methods of sealing a board that may have some negative attachments is to place it in the earth. And so if you find one in the earth, don't bring it home and don't use it. That's a bad thing, because somebody put it there to try to seal an entity, and I think it's by virtue of grounding it, because entities are energy, and if you seal it in the ground, you are grounding that energy, so to speak. I'm not sure of why people believe that, but they do. So finding a buried Ouija board is not a treasure. It's something you want to definitely not play with and leave there, unless you are an incredibly experienced occultist and can manage to cleanse it. But I would just say leave it alone. That's my advice. Nothing good will come of it, man. That was a terrible Jamaican accent. But I live to entertain, and even though I failed miserably sometimes, I'll always try. All right, the next one's coming from Pennsylvania. And this is in 2003. I had retired after a mere 3 years from public school teaching in Brooklyn, New York. I was 26 years old and had no real idea what to do with my life in terms of a career. And instead of going to law school like everyone else, I decided I would do something a little less ordinary and a little more exciting than forging a career. I decided out of the blue, really, that I would go home to Ohio for a while. And this idea quickly blossomed into a trek of sorts as the plan became to bicycle from my apartment in Brooklyn to my parents' house in Columbus, Ohio. No problem. All I had to do was procure a bike and go west until things began to look familiar. Long story short, I bought a bike and saddlebags, loaded up my gear, trained for a week, just a week, wow, and then headed west into New Jersey in early October. Good God. I averaged about 60 miles or so in a day, depending on the terrain, and quickly realized I had bitten off way more than I could chew. I rolled into town one evening after having chewed through 80 miles of western Pennsylvania countryside, so dehydrated I felt as though I was severely hungover. I couldn't even eat. I sat in my hotel room and drank Gatorade for hours, and I realized it was a long trip, and I would need to take things easier if I was going to make the 400-plus miles back to the Ohio River Valley, and I decided to break up my trip with days of rest. Sometime at the end of my first week on the road, a Friday, I glided into Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, the site of the epic battle and the same name that would turn the tide of the Civil War in favor of the Union. I thought this would be a good place to hold up for a few days and rest while checking out the sights, and it was early in the afternoon, and I called friends the previous day and asked them to meet me in Gettysburg for the weekend, and they complied, and we split a hotel, and we had a nice time playing around the battlefield and just hanging out that night and the following Saturday. At the end of the next day, my friends drove back to New York City, and I got a new motel room up the road about 3 miles from the town. That night, since I was again on my own, I decided to go on one of the many ghost tours Gettysburg has to offer. Mine visited different haunted sites around the town and battlefield and ended in the Farnsworth Inn, one of the reportedly most haunted hotels in America. The tour went down into the basement where the tour guide related the story of the inn. The Farnsworth Inn served as a hospital, as did nearly every building in the town, evidently. In July 1863, my tour group consisted of my tour group consisted of about 10 people, a family of three, a few couples, and myself, the single guy carrying around a bike helmet and a lock. The basement was about 20 feet wide by 30 feet long, laid out in a small stage, with a small stage in front, where the tour guide stood and spoke, telling a few more ghost stories about the inn itself. There was a series of folding chairs set up in about 10 rows of 20 chairs each, with the aisle in the middle, and almost everyone sat in or near the first four rows. And I selected the first chair from the aisle in front, about the sixth row or so, and prepared to listen to the tour guide tell us about the deceased soldiers who supposedly still haunted the hotel. Before she began the stories, however, she had a disclaimer for us. She told us not to be alarmed if anyone felt a touch or a presence while in the basement, and to please not jump up and scream or run out of the basement, because not only did it alarm others, but it's an old place with cramped doorways and steep stairs, and people have hurt themselves trying to flee in the past. That made sense to me. No sooner had the words passed her lips when I felt someone's hand come down to rest on my left shoulder, between my shoulder and neck, right on the leftmost part of my trapezius muscle, and gave me a gentle but certainly deliberate squeeze. My first thought was simply, somebody wants me to move so they can see the stage, and as soon as I felt this pressure on my shoulder, I said, oh, excuse me, and shifted to the right to provide a view while turning around to smile and say, sorry. But as my head rotated back over my shoulder, I could clearly see that not only was there nobody sitting in the seat behind me, but that there was not one person in the back of the room at all. I was the last person in the seats, and eventually everyone in the room was seated in front of me. I did not scream. I didn't even bother to tell our tour guide what had occurred, as I was sure she experiences that kind of thing all the time. However, when the tour was over, I had to get back on my bike and pedal 3 miles through the dark countryside back to my motel. Suffice to say, I was scared the whole time. I would see a detachment of the phantom soldiers on patrol or something. My legs were burning upon screeching into the driveway of my motel, and it took me an hour to calm down and stop sweating. Man, it is dark in the countryside at night, and I still had about 300 miles of it left to go. Wow. That's a good story. Those old Civil War battlefields are just chock full of that, both residual and active intelligent haunts. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of lives were lost abruptly, and very young lives in most cases. And, you know, it's just unfortunately probably not the way that, not the way it's supposed to go. I think that those kind of deaths are nothing short of absolutely tragic. And there's a lot of broken dreams on those battlefields too. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me. There's a lot of sadness binding that energy there. And so I know there's some psychics that I've talked to that make it a point to go to those battlefields and try to cross people over. And I think that's wonderful. Let them release, get them home. They don't need to be stuck there anymore. They've suffered long enough, and it's so tragic and sad that that is their reality until someone helps them find the way home. So it's good to know there's people out there that are doing just that. So this one's coming out of Illinois. All these stories are kind of significant tonight. They're not a short one yet. I know that it's difficult to believe a ghost story that you haven't even experienced yourself, but I can only relate my experiences to the best of my ability. It was so intense that I feel compelled to share it. I have in the past had some experiences with paranormal, but never one quite as scary as my experience in the antique store basement, located in a small northern Illinois town. It was a nice summer day, and I was looking at the antiques with my mom in a store that I later found was once a hardware store, and we both went down the stairs into the basement, and as I was walking, I felt dizzy, and I could not avoid the strange idea in my head of my head smashing into the pavement I was walking on. We were making our way to the back of the basement, and my eyes were drawn to the corners of the ceiling as if I was watching for something move back and forth between them. I had another odd thought of a tiger pacing back and forth, its shoulder blades moving swiftly above its stooped head. And I was ignoring these thoughts as we got out of the end of the room, and I suddenly heard a man's deep voice slowly work up to a savage scream, "Get out, get out, get out, get out!" It sounded like a man going insane with anger and grief. It was a voice that is best described as tormented. The hairs on the back of my neck and chills ran up and down my back, and I noticed that there was no one but us in the basement, and turned to my mom to quietly suggest that we leave. Before I heard a response, I turned to see my mother literally running away through the basement and up the stairs. I could not stop myself from yelling, "Wait for me, don't leave me alone, wait, wait." Needless to say, as we walked straight out of the store and started a long and silent trip home. Weirdly enough, we didn't even talk about why we ran away. Like lunatics, and the moment was nearly forgotten. Why we ran away like lunatics, sorry. That was bad narrating there for my part. Until 2 weeks later when I finally had to bring it up to her. Neither of us were very comfortable with it, but my late grandmother, mother, and myself seemed to have somewhat psychic abilities. As I said earlier, I've experienced a few things before with and without my mother, so it was odd for me not to bring it up earlier. Without telling her any details, I asked her if she happened to hear anybody yelling that day. She stopped what she was doing and answered, "Yes." I asked her to repeat what she heard, and it was exactly what I had heard that day. Even the crazed tone and rising anger with each "get out" was precisely as I had heard it. She still refuses to say any more about that day, and I'm left to wonder alone what I experienced and why. I was curious that I tried to look up the history of the town, which was really very sparse. I did find that a man named George had shot himself in the head around the time that the store was in use, but couldn't confirm anything for sure. I continued to have paranormal experiences, but nothing comes close to the surprise and terror I had experienced on that day. Yeah, you know, I don't know if it was an audible voice or if it was just something they heard telepathically. I don't know. It's not really clear. I mean, they both heard it, but they're both apparently gifted. Next story. This one has a cool title. It's called Portal House. And, well, being the paranormal portal, that kind of fits. Let's see. Well, that actually comes from Minnesota, too. That's cool. Minnesota, ladies and gentlemen. That's my old stomping grounds as well. Ooh, this is a spooky one already. Paranormal portal, the portal house. I'm from Minnesota. The story's from Minnesota. I'm just saying. It's a really short one, though, so let's see what it has to say. I'd just come home from school, and I was walking up my stairs to my apartment. In my uncle's window, you can see his living room, and as I was walking up, and I had happened to look in those windows, my cousins are young and have this rocking horse. It was rocking back and forth, and I sat there and watched as it kept moving and then stopped. After a few minutes of wondering what I saw, I heard and saw their bedroom door slam shut. And that is just one of the little stories that I have. This house is very odd. Where I live, there is no living room, just a hallway, bathroom, kitchen, and mine and my dad's rooms. But in that one hallway, there are three doors. Or no, there are eight doors, sorry. I can't explain it, but throughout the whole house, there is 25 doors. 4 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, 5 walk-in closets. And I don't get it. I think it's a portal or something. There's such an eerie feeling to this whole house. One day my niece was sitting on my bed, and she's 2 years old, and I was sitting right next to her as she said, "Do you see the man?" I was totally amazed at what she had said. That very same day, she was sitting in the hallway playing with her toy horses and looked up at the ceiling and said, "Will you please go away?" She started to cry, and my door slammed shut. I will never know what went on that day, but to this day, she will not play or be alone in my room. Huh. I don't understand with the 8 doors and why that's weird, and there's 25 doors in the house, and I don't know. That's a lot of doors for just those few rooms, but who knows if that's the original floor plan or not. Depending on the age of the house, I had an old Victorian home, and there were lots of extra doors that really weren't necessary, but they probably were with the original floor plan. The old houses had usually pretty small rooms. And that was for conservation of heat, I suppose. You know, it's easier to heat a small space that you're going to be in rather than an entire large space that you're only going to use a small part of. Many houses were built long before such things as, you know, central heating and air conditioning and such. So the idea was to only worry about heating where you were going to be, and the other rooms would just be cold. So I don't know. It's not really clear through the narrative of that story what is meant by all these 25 doors. But I assume there's just a lot of redundant doors that were at one time may have made sense, but don't any longer. So they probably changed part of the floor plan, but never did, frame in those doors and close them off because, for whatever reason, I guess, I don't know. But like I said, my old Victorian house, it had a lot of doorways it didn't need. There was several redundant ones that one would go into on the top of the stairs. There was 3 doors, but there only needed to be 2. But I think one of the doors used to continue up to a stairway to the old attic. But that was since redone, and there was a drop-down, pull-down ladder thing in there that I'm sure wasn't original, obviously. So I don't know. It's very, very, very curious. But cool story. I think those old houses, if it is indeed an old house, they have so much character and so much energy, and they've seen so much through their spans. Like this house that I'm in right now is a very old house, and as I understand it, it's one of the oldest houses in this town. It's been kind of refabbed. I'm sure they stripped out a lot of the original beauty and wood and put up these new fabricated walls. I don't know. They're all rounded corners, and it certainly isn't the original, but I don't know how the floor plan was changed when that was done either, though. So there's a lot I don't know about this house, but it's a neat old house. It has a good energy. All right, the next one's coming from Rhode Island. I submitted a story not too long ago about my grandma on my dad's side and her supposedly haunted house. This story is about my grandma on my mom's side of the family, and no doubt, her house is definitely haunted. When my mom was younger, she moved from Portugal to the U.S. Portugal. I don't know. For some reason that felt weird in my mouth. Into Rhode Island and settled into the house, which my grandmother still lives in today. My mom tells me the house was always weird and she'd always hear things. At night, she would be in her bedroom on the second floor and hear someone walking up the stairs. But nobody ever emerged onto the second floor. All she heard were footsteps in the basement, and when you put your ear to the wall, you could hear someone heavily breathing through the concrete. I always knew the house was a bit off and sort of creepy, but until the past summer, I now know someone definitely haunts the house. And I had the experience of seeing my first ghost. Me and my younger sister, Victoria, decided to sleep over at my grandma's house one day over the summer. School was starting in a few weeks, so I think it was towards the end of August when this happened. And we slept fine, though, through the night. But I opted to keep the television on while we fell asleep because we were both really nervous about sleeping with the lights off in her house. The next morning we ate breakfast, watched some TV, and I decided to go upstairs and gather my things because my grandmother had to go to work in an hour, so we were leaving soon. I grabbed my backpack and set it on the bed, and I was looking down to the bed as I put my stuff inside, but I could see the doorway out of the corner of my eye. Now, this is one of the creepiest things that I've ever experienced. As I was glancing down at the bed, I saw a very pale woman with white hair in a white nightgown stagger by the doorway. Then I heard the light switch in the other room being flicked up and down for about 10 seconds. Then it stopped, and I waited for someone to emerge from the room. I thought maybe it was my grandma or sister. This still gives me the chills when I think about it. I stepped into the other room and looked around, and nobody was there. I looked around all on the second floor. It's not that big, a bathroom, two bedrooms, and a small living room with one door to the attic, and nobody was there at all. It was just me. I got freaked out as I clumsily stuffed the rest of my stuff in the bag and ran downstairs. I didn't go back up there that day. I told my mom about it after she translated it to my grandmother. She's Portuguese and not good with English, nor can I speak Portuguese. She got creeped out, and my mom told me that when her great-grandmother was still living and quite often fell down the stairs she lived with them, that often felt as though someone pushed her hard. A few months ago, I was in the backyard, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw a little girl in a blue dress run by and go behind the bushes. When I looked, nobody was there. My cousins and siblings were there, but none of them wore a blue dress. I'd really like to see the history of this house, but I don't know how I do that. Yeah, that's, again, those old places. They've got a lot of energy just sticks around. Whether it's intelligent or residual, I don't know. But, you know, the flicking of the light switch, it could just be an auditory hallucination caused by spiritual energy, or it could actually be flicking a switch. You don't know without knowing whether the lights actually went on or off. I don't know. But very interesting. Very, very interesting. All right, so this one is next. this one sounds a little odd, and thank goodness it's not a long story. But we'll see what this is going on. This is from Texas. I don't know. I don't know if I'll be able to read it all or not. It seems to have a sexual theme to it, and you know, this being a family show and all, I do try to avoid those. So let's see what it says. My level of boredom at work today is high, so I've taken to writing down old family ghost stories. And my aunt, by marriage, grew up in the same neighborhood as my father. Growing up in the north side of Fort Worth, Texas, during the 60s, while she was growing up, her and her family had a perverted ghost that regularly caused problems in the bathroom of the house. Go figure. If it's a perverted ghost, where is it going to be? Of course it's going to be in the bathroom, because that's where naked stuff happens. All right, so let's see what's going on. They took to calling him Charlie, but I don't really know why. My aunt would tell me about how she and her sisters would be taking showers in the bathroom, and all of a sudden the shower curtain would open quickly, and a cold breeze would invade the shower, no matter how hot the water. My aunt and her sisters were afraid at first, but after time they just got annoyed by, quote, Charlie, and they would yell at him that they were cold and he needed to get out of the bathroom and stop being a pervert. Knowing my aunt, several four-letter words were probably also yelled. Charlie would apologize by closing the shower curtain and warming up the shower. My aunt and her family never found out who or what Charlie was, but he never hurt anybody, and he would always stop if you asked him to stop whatever he was doing. My aunt said that she just thought he liked getting an eyeful of teenage girls. Oh, jeez. Oh, Charlie, come on. Which was probably true, and I'm sure Charlie was upset when my aunt's family actually moved away. Yeah, that'd be a little tough. Now, here's the curiosity to me. Oops, I didn't mean to do that. Here's the curiosity to me. So, is our libido attached to our biology? And that's what I'm not sure about, because you do hear things like this, and you do hear things like, you know, spirits still wanting to have that kind of sexual connection. And I'm not sure why. And perhaps it's because true intimacy is also very energetic, and maybe that's the draw. But it's weird that there would still be a lustful issue for a spirit that no longer had a body. In other words, you know, so is our lustful natures tied to us having a physical body and biology? And I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, is that something that we're, you know, liberated from when we do pass from this body? Is sexuality now, are we asexual upon passing? And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know. But it does come up. And is it because people are still stuck in their earthly state that they still have those attachments? And if they had actually transitioned, would those be gone? I don't know. It's a curiosity to me, but it does come up that, you know, these spirits seem to have, there are some that seem to really desire that intimate connection still, even though they are no longer in a body. There are stories of all kinds. You know, when you think of succubus and incubus, they need that connection, but it's not, I believe for them it is completely about an energetic connection, because they subsist, or they seem to subsist, based upon that energy. So I don't know. Very strange. It is a curiosity for sure. So the next one's coming from Massachusetts. This one's pretty long. All right, this says, I will never in my life forget the night that I first laid eyes on the ghost that inhabits my bedroom. I just moved my bedroom from the third floor of our house down to the basement because my older brother moved into his own place and the basement boasted more room for me and a lot more privacy. I was soundly asleep, and anyone would tell you I sleep like a rock, and it takes a lot to wake me up. Suddenly my eyes shot open, and I wasn't at all groggy or out of it, as people usually are when they suddenly awaken in the middle of the night. I was very awake and very aware, and the first thing I saw were the bright red lights of my alarm clock that read 3:15 a.m. I peered over slowly across the room, and that's when I saw it. She was standing at the foot of my bed, an older woman, short and on the heavy side, and she was wearing a shawl and holding it over her shoulders, and her hair was pulled back neatly into a tight bun. She looked like an old Italian grandmother type, and she had the most serious look on her face. Not mean or angry, just serious. Her entire figure was a gray-white color, but I could distinctly make out her facial features, and I will never in my life forget her face. I was so shocked that I couldn't move. I literally could not convey any emotion, whether it be horror, happiness, or sadness. It was as if I was frozen with shock, and even stranger, I didn't feel scared. After probably 15 or 20 seconds of complete eye contact, I was able to slam my eyelids shut, and when I reopened my eyes, she was gone. Somehow I had managed to fall back asleep that night, and I soon understood that the ghost wasn't a dark spirit because she never made me feel afraid. Since this experience, I've had many, many other strange things happen in my bedroom, but I've never seen the ghost again. Pictures will fall off the wall in the middle of the night, candles or odd objects will literally be flung across my bedroom, the door will slowly creak open and hit the wall with a thud at random times, jewelry will disappear and never be seen again, my girlfriend's pair of gold earrings completely vanished, along with a few of my earrings and chains. And it's come to the point where I accept that I share a bedroom with a ghost. If she's screwing with me, I simply say out loud, "Cut it out," or "Stop it, go away." And it usually works. I think of myself as having the gift of experiencing paranormal activity. As I've gotten older, I've learned to accept it and even cherish it because it's not an ability many people have. I know the instant I enter a new place, whether spirit or energies are present. One night, me and my girlfriend were at my sister's house babysitting my niece when we suddenly both heard the faint but clear as crystal whispers of children coming from the baby monitor. At the time, my niece was only a couple months old and hadn't even started baby babbling. I ran up the stairs to my niece's bedroom thinking someone had broken into the house, only to find her soundly asleep in the room and the room to be deathly silent. I'm convinced that someone was drowned on the second floor bathtub of my home. When I was younger, I used to love taking baths, but became completely horrified and envisioned a stranger's hand holding me underwater whenever I would dunk my head under to rinse out shampoo. I think that spirits are attracted to me because my life of paranormal experiences can go on and on. My mother told me she used to see the ghost of a woman walking back and forth from the bathroom and the visions of someone being drowned in my bedroom when my bedroom was upstairs. One night I was driving home from a friend's house all alone and I peered over in the passenger seat and I saw the faint figure of a little girl sitting right next to me. I slammed the car to a stop and had to get out and recollect myself afterwards. Just last night I was at a friend's house and where he also experiences paranormal activity regularly. And just sitting there watching television, I said to myself, "I've never had any weird experiences here. I wonder why." And at that exact moment, there was a loud bang on my friend's bedroom door to where everyone in the room jumped in horror because nobody else was in the house. As I said before, I've come to the point where I can accept the fact that the paranormal is attracted to me. I truly believe it's a gift rather than a burden, and I've yet to experience any negative energy or had any negative paranormal experiences, so that might change, but for now I accept it and think it's pretty cool. There is that. That's a cool story. I think this will be the last one then. So this one's coming out of Texas, ladies and gentlemen. This is my first time submitting a story, but definitely not my first paranormal experience. This actually occurred to my next door neighbor. I like to call her, it says V8. It's a long story, but I guess it has to do with the fruit juice, but okay, or the vegetable juice. But as well as, it has to do with my next door neighbor as well as me. But since it's my computer, I get to tell the story. V8 and I were sitting in my front yard laughing at each other while snapping pictures with my new camera. It was really fun until we headed over to the old playground set that my brother and I had installed when I was littler. V8 started freezing up and looking over there until she was she finally told me she kept seeing this guy walking past the swing set. I asked her about it, and the more she said, the more freaked out I got. This isn't my first experience, but by far, but it's the first that I've had with someone else. And the person she was describing exactly described one of the people I'd seen flitting about in my backyard before. He also perfectly described a person we thought we had made up. His name is Seth, and he is 16. Has long emo black hair and wears a gray hoodie and black jeans. He only appears in flashes. You can never see him for long, but I get the feeling he's letting us see him way more than normal, because before he only appeared out of the corner of my eyes, and now I can see him for intervals that last seconds. He has some certain pathways and patterns he always follows. He's always either sitting down or walking from left or right to left. He never walks towards you or from left to right. And only one time I was standing in my front yard, I felt him tap my shoulder and no one was there. Seth also has certain feeling when it comes to him. It's peaceful feeling. Whenever he's around, you feel totally at ease no matter what. It feels like your heart is full, and I don't know how to describe it any better than that. But we took a picture of my old playground equipment, and at first saw nothing odd. Only on further inspection did V8 and I realize there was a human shadow going in complete opposite direction from the other shadows that were going right where Seth had been standing. And under further inspection, we found the name Seth spelled out in leaves and sticks in the background of the picture. But Seth, as I said, is calming. You know he's not out to kill you, and you can tell when he's around. Plus, it only happens when it's sunny. Seth is just a sunny person, I guess. One time I lost my camera battery, and Seth found it for us. I asked for his help, and there it was, sitting where I had already looked a few seconds earlier. Seth is actually a nice guy, once you get to know him. He's only gotten mad at me once, which was a mess up on my part. And I can't say the same for most recent addition to the ghost V8 and I have been seeing. There are four. One from a long time ago that left, and one that just came today. She's not actually doing anything, but when I said Seth gives you a calming feeling when he's around, then for her it's the opposite. You all of a sudden feel paranoid, on edge, almost terrified, and then she shows up. I know I'm not imagining things, because when she showed up at school today, V8 noticed also. Plus, another girl in my class commented on the feeling that she was getting, and people might not notice Seth, but whoever this girl is, she gets noticed. The room started suddenly smelling weird. It made you dizzy, and you get cold, and you start getting a headache, and then you get that paranoid feeling, and it didn't help when I saw her twice last night. She showed up in the mirror, and when I turned around, she wasn't there. I couldn't sleep. And then I heard this odd noise that I couldn't place. It was a bike. V8 told me a story about her siblings and her when she was littler, seeing a bike with no one riding. And when she described the noise it made, it fit. I might also add that I only knew one ghost before V8 moved onto my street, and I was unaware he was even a ghost. I thought I had an overactive imagination. I lay in bed freaking out when I saw her flit through the hallway. Unlike Seth, she has platinum, almost white hair that's average long length and wears a white dress. I don't know if she was murdered and that's how she died or what. I want to get to know her, but she always leaves when I actually start acknowledging her. Unlike some of the stories here, this didn't go away suddenly. There isn't a solution yet, as I said, all these ghosts have never actually done any harm. The only instance I can remember that was once something pushed V8 into the pool, and I was almost strangled while lying alone in bed once. I don't know what happened either of these times, but it's not the same feeling, and I don't know what to think. So there you have it. Very creepy. Again, oftentimes we just wander into the presences of these spirits. They probably didn't exist before, they've been there forever, rather. Sorry, I'm just multitasking, and as a man, that's that's a fallacy. I can't actually multitask. So, land, houses, they all record energies, I think. And so sometimes these are just playbacks. They're just recordings. And sometimes they are earthbound spirits. And I don't know. It's hard to tell which is which with those last situations, because in those last situations, it doesn't seem like anything was actually targeting or interacting directly with them, unless you consider that they saw them interaction. And that's possible. They might let themselves be seen. But I don't know. For the most part, it almost sounds residual in a lot of cases. So, all right, guys, that's going to wrap up the show for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day, and remember to laugh as much as you can.
Betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired story. storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.